Do you find it hard to explain to friends and family what you now do? Are you wasting valuable time by attempting to figure out challenges on your own? We have created a community for ex-corporate people running their own business who want to live a life they love whilst giving back to their community. This is the Build, Live, Give Show. We bring you firsthand experiences of guests going through many of the struggles you face each and every day. We get real with no corporate BS. And now your host, Paul Higgins.
Welcome to the Build, Live, Give Show. I'm Paul Higgins and I'm your show host. And today I'm very excited to have Kobe Jones from the Silk Group. Kobe started work only 3 days after he left school. He worked in financial services and building services, and then he went and worked for 3 out of the 4 top banks in Australia. And then he took the very courageous move. He actually sold his own house to establish a fantastic private investment bank, and he has global aspirations to be the number one private investment bank in the world. He gives a really deep insight into what the top 1% of wealth do differently to most of us. So definitely get your pens and paper ready, because Kobe drops a lot of value in this podcast. So what I'll now do is hand you over to Kobe Jones of the Silk Group. If you're enjoying listening to these journeys, just letting you know, we have a community for ex-career people running profitable businesses just like you. It's called BLG Boost. You get exclusive access to a forum of like-minded peers answering your most pressing questions 24/7. You get specific action tips to solve your most common challenges. You get trusted suppliers to remove lost time. You also get access to member exclusive offers to save you money. You also get access to myself as a coach directly on a one-on-one basis. You get weekly videos from global experts. And finally, you get monthly webinars solving topics mentioned in popular threads. If you're tired of being alone and want to rapidly grow your dream business, go to buildlivegive.com/BLG Boost. This link is in the show notes. Please check it out. Okay, I will see you inside. It's great to have you on, Kobe. I know we haven't caught up for a while.
Thanks.
But today we're going to get to know a lot about you, but why don't you start with a little bit of your backstory?
Thanks for the opportunity, actually, Paul. It's been a little while since we've spoken, but I appreciate you reaching out, actually, and just allowing you to, or me to share my story. A bit of background about me. I actually started working when I was about 17. I actually finished my year 12. I had 3 days off and I've worked ever since. I originally started in the building services industry. I got some experience there, and then I had a passion for financial services, which prompted me to move across. I did all my studies part-time. I worked at 3 of the 4 major banks. I worked at a boutique investment group, and then about 6.5 years ago, I started the Silk Group. I think Silk Group as an organisation is really a culmination of my experiences, both in the building services industry and the financial services industry, to actually look to support mid-market clients, which are the market segments that we service today.
Brilliant. And what's something that your family or friends would know about you outside of work that the BLG audience wouldn't?
it's a funny question, that one, but there's probably many things, but the one that I will share with you is that I'm a Collingwood supporter. It's nothing over the top. I just say that because people look at me and go, oh gee, you're smart and you're doing well for yourself, what are you doing barracking for Collingwood? So it's a great conversation starter, and as you know, coming from Victoria or Melbourne, we're quite passionate and avid barrackers of our teams. But there are other things, but that's probably one humorous one.
Yeah, well, I sit on the opposite side of the fence. I'm a Carlton supporter, and for our global listeners, it's our unique game, the Australian rules. If you haven't watched it, certainly get a chance to go and look at it or watch it on TV. It's quite a brilliant game. We're very passionate about it. And Collingwood supporters are the most passionate out of the lot of them.
So very true, very true.
But I won't hold that against you. And I see you have got a coach for another 2 years. So
Luckily.
Yes, that people, that it'll be old news by the time this podcast comes out, but it was new news for us today. So as far as, you know, you, like you said, you worked for three out of the four major banks. Going from there into, and boutique firms, et cetera, going from that environment into taking the plunge and doing it yourself, what was sort of the key reason you chose that path?
Look, I think, Paul, I'm very grateful for the experiences I had in those sort of larger institutions. You develop your skills, your knowledge, your networks. But as much as you learn all the good things, you sort of learn some bad things and also where the gaps and opportunities are. So as much as I was working in those environments outside of the normal day-to-day, 9-to-5 work, I was also accumulating a lot of ideas and jotting down, a framework for a business plan where I thought there were some clear gaps and opportunities in the marketplace. So I accumulated those ideas along the way. So I always had a passion to start a business. But when I went through the GFC, I think market conditions were pretty flat during that time. They weren't as buoyant as they were previously. I was quite successful in the banking sort of environment, but I guess what I wanted to do is get more autonomy, accountability, control, ownership, responsibility for myself, and also empower not only myself but the team that we have. So I developed a framework along the way, and then come about 6.5-7 years ago, I actually registered the business. I went through the process, perhaps similar to you, of actually selling my house and then starting the business. I originally started in the first, 8 to 9 months out of a study, out of my house, and then after that went into a serviced office. I remember traveling into the city on my own with my luggage bag and plonking myself sometimes at the state library in hotel foyers and in building lobbies where there was Wi-Fi, and actually plonking myself there and actually doing work but using it sometimes as a base in between meetings. Over time you sort of graft away to business plan, understanding, what people require, what they're looking for, but also what team members perhaps may be attracted to. So they're all the things that I thought about and put together when I formed the business.
Yeah, and I'll sort of dive a little bit more into that in a moment. But just to reflect back, I love the comment about 5-star hotels. I actually used to go into the foyer of the Western in Melbourne, and now once a year I go and stay there as a bit of a thank you. So no one there will ever know why I do that. But they're free Wi-Fi, water, and lovely condition was my office for the first couple of years.
I totally empathise actually, because that's exactly what I did at the Western. I perhaps should stay there a bit more often actually.
Mind you, there it's a bit noisy at the moment because of the all the road the works that are going on around there.
Yeah,
and, if you go to 6 to 7 years ago, I know it sort of time passes really quickly. But what were some of the key fears that you had when you were on the way on that train into the city, and you had sort of sold the house, placed a big bet, and were starting your own business? What are some of the key fears you can remember back to?
To be honest with you, I mean, there is fear of the unknown. I think fear can hold us back or it can push us forward. So whenever I speak to anyone about, starting a business, they just think, oh, it's massive risk and, you've taken a big punt on yourself. But I see it on the flip side. I'm pretty contrarian in mind when it comes to backing yourself. So if you have a lot of self-belief, if you believe in what you're doing, if you believe in the opportunities, it's not risk, it's actually de-risking. So I think a lot of fear is driven by risk, but sometimes those risks can be either made up or just perceived. Clearly, the unknown is not necessarily a comfortable thing for everyone, but that again is your opportunity. You may be operating in the top, 5%, 2% of the general population. But you know, as much as that's risky, but that's also a huge opportunity. So I think, you know, for me, the only fear would be, you know, on oneself. It's not necessarily fear of the market, fear of competitors, fear of your customers, fear of your team members. It's you know, if you've got a good value proposition, a good business model, you can really approach the market with absolute confidence. It's just having that self-belief and being able to remain focused on that. I think that's one thing people can really get, distracted by, you know, some of the external noise, whether it be, you know, from a regulatory stance, from a media stance, from a competitor stance, from a competitor stance. There's a multitude of reasons, you know, to not continue on. But I think that's one of the things that you need to have is a whole bunch of grit and a whole bunch of courage, a lot of stamina, you know, patience and perseverance to be able to push through that. The other thing I think you've got to overcome, to be honest with you, is loneliness in some ways. And what I mean by that is, you know, some of your thoughts, the way you think, is not necessarily traditional. So you've got to be different as a business owner. And again, you're operating at sort of top 2%, 5% of the general population. So it can be very lonely. I go to a lot of functions. I may present at various, you know, seminars, go to a lot of, so to speak. But in terms of the way you think, it's very lonely because it's unique and it's not for everyone. But that for me is my point of differentiation. So that's, you know, there hopefully some insights that I can provide in terms of, you know, my greatest fears and what I guess you've got to overcome.
Yeah, look, and I'll just pick up on two really valid points there. I think one around the de-risks. I know that when I left was around similar time to you, around that 7-year mark, and then most of my colleagues thought I was the crazy one. So huge risk, et cetera. Now I look at a lot of them 7 years, 6 years on, there's a lot of uncertainty in the market, especially I came from FMCG. So, you know, there's a lot of downsizing and, you know, nearly every month it's like a new restructure and they're very uncertain. So I think that's really flipped from the 7 years ago, and I could sort of predict that. So that was one of the reasons why I left. And I think the other one is around this loneliness, and that's why we've sort of created the BLG community, because there wasn't, even my friends that I talk to in corporate today, they still don't really understand what I do. They see a guy at home in his tracksuit, you know, talking to people around the world and don't really get what I do. So I think being around like peers, I think is really powerful, and that's the whole impetus behind BLG. And you know, through your journey, was there ever a time where you thought, you know what, this is so hard, I think I might actually go back to corporate?
Oh, look, every day I I'm confronted with the difficulties of managing and owning a business. You contemplate going to a corporate because you think it's easier, but you've just touched on it before. I think it's perceived, you know, that it is it's an easier option. You've got a different pressure on you. But here I feel far more empowered, you know, far more in control of my own destiny. And that's something I want to impart on my team. But every day you're faced with, you know, various unique, you know, challenges that, it takes a lot of character to actually overcome. So, you know, if I ever do get into that mindset of, you know, would I go back to a corporate, I just think about the reasons why I left that in the first place.
Great. And the last question in this section is around the help. So you sort of mentioned, you know, that it can be lonely, et cetera. How have you overcome that, and what sort of ways have you sought some help as you've scaled this fantastic business of yours?
Yeah, I think, look, I personally really enjoy people. I like dealing with people. I'm quite passionate about people, and particularly in the markets that we service, which are predominantly business owners, high net worths, family offices. They're very successful people. So I'm in a very privileged position to be able to interact and deal with them. So getting those that their inputs and their encouragement was great, but also built a formal advisory board around me, and the advisory board are a fantastic sounding board, great group of individuals who provide, mentoring and coaching. I don't know what I don't know, and I'm comfortable asking those questions. They're more than willing to give back. They're more than willing to open up their networks. They're more than willing to, support me and my team, whether it be from a marketing perspective or a reputational perspective or a governance perspective. So what I did was just actually deliberately build out a formal advisory board. We actually have a board charter and a board mandate. We engage those individuals at a professional level, and we keep them updated on a regular basis. In fact, my next board meeting is in the next few weeks. You do need to build out your network. I mean, I built it out over a number of years, and it comes in various shapes and forms. But you also have some very close individuals that you do rely on, and these individuals you may not necessarily agree 100% of the time with 100% of the things that they say, but at least they challenge you, at least they test you, they take you out of your comfort zone. So you've got to you've got to have people around you that do challenge you, that do want to support you, and that are quite genuine in their intent. But it may mean that you do disagree with their either insights or their opinions. I think you've got to go out and surround yourself with like-minded people, but those that will also challenge you as well.
And if you had to just summarize, like you said, you deal with a lot of high net worth people, some very really successful families and individuals. If you had to sort of look at some of the key things that they do that maybe others don't, given the fact that you are so close to this, what's some insight you can give on that?
I think the number one that stands out for me is that they are contrarian. 90% of the market, or 90% of individuals, may move in a certain direction, but it's the top 5%, the top 10% that actually won't say necessarily move in the opposite direction, but they are looking at the opportunity or the situation differently. So they are very contrarian in mind. They'll go into areas where others won't. They'll pull out of areas where others won't. They'll also put money where their mouth is. Throughout life, I think life's about a series of bets and risks, and these people sort of back themselves. They put their shingle out, from my mind, the biggest one that stands out is they back themselves, and they as I said, they're contrarian in mind.
Brilliant. That's some excellent insights. Now we'll move on into the build section, and you briefly touched on in the intro what you do, but if you walk into a networking event today, or you have a new client that comes in, how do you sort of describe what you do?
Yeah, look, we're like a private investment bank. So there's three, core services we provide. It's around corporate advisory. So it's M&A work, buy side, sell side, financial due diligence, evaluation sort of work. We provide capital into a transaction. So that may be senior debt, subordinated debt, convertibles, hybrids, preferred equity, and ordinary equity. And then we provide what we term as portfolio solutions. So they're things like funds management, investment management, trustee services, risk management, and the like. And this is right across the full spectrum of investment, lending, and financial markets products. So if you look at the type of clients we service, which are all wholesale clients as defined by the Corporations Act, and they're usually, as I said, high net worth, family offices, commercial and corporate clients. If we look at the capacity we service them and then in the product streams we service them with, it's like a private investment bank. What we're doing, though, is doing that through a very different model. One thing that I'm very conscious of is ensuring that we align ourselves to the clients that we service. And what I mean by that is that our business is run through an equity partnership model, which is through the various business units, which are effectively centres of excellence. And then over time, what we do want to build out is business centres, which would be more akin to a franchising model. So that's our scale business. And this is something that we can replicate not only throughout Australia, but if not the world. So my aspiration is for us to be the world's largest private investment bank. But we can only do that through the right people. And so if we're all business owners ourselves, we understand what it means to, you know, control your own balance sheet, run your own cash flows and generate your own P&L. And that's very empowering. Yes, there is risk and rewards, but you have, you know, complete accountability, control, ownership, responsibility for yourself, whilst, you know, operating interdependently. So that for us is really key, because anyone can replicate products, anyone can replicate, you know, technology or services, et cetera, et cetera. You cannot replicate the people. And so for me, culture is absolutely critical in being able to build out a very successful business. And to do that, we need like-minded people that service the clients that, you know, that or service the markets that we're servicing. And that means, though, that we'll only attract the top, again, 5, 10% of the marketplace. But that's really good, because, again, that's your point of differentiation. So for me, that's you know, that's certainly where we want to be, not only domestically but globally.
And how has that, or if it has, that culture and your view of the culture changed over the 7 years?
That's a very interesting question, because when I first started the business, you know, we would advertise for people and we'd touch our own networks and, you know, go through, you know, various channels. And we were just grateful for anyone to come to the business. But what I noticed, and look, it's a combination of things, and I think it's, you know, the fact that we're early stage, the fact that we're in financial services, and the fact that we're just happy to take anyone on. Yet we had a much higher turnover of people within the business. You know, going on sort of, you know, 4 or 5 years post that, you're really, you know, focusing on bringing on the right people. So instead of just, you know, being, you know, happy that anyone's applied, I think, you know, with certain positions or the type of characters that you attract, you certainly have to be ready for them. You know, people in financial services get paid pretty well for what they do. You know, there's sometimes a bit of ego that's attached to that. Sometimes, you know, a huge amount of expectation, and sometimes you've got to break down whether or not it was them that was successful, or was it the institution that made them successful, or was it the team that they were part of that was successful. And those individuals too may be successful in those environments, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be successful in a smaller environment or a different environment. So building out the culture is absolutely critical, and getting the right, caliber and the right frame of mind. Another good example of that too is when we were about 6 months into starting the business, we actually opened an office in Sydney, a virtual office, and I'd do the fly-in, fly-out sort of thing. You know, up in Sydney, but it didn't work out because we just didn't have the culture right, the technology right, the reason, the framework and the infrastructure set up, you know, in our head office. So we shut it down, you know, within the year. But people sort of weren't as engaged as what we would like. Just sort of, you know, left to their own devices. So one thing we're now conscious of doing is building out our base here in Melbourne. And once we're at a sort of a critical stage, we can sort of you know, branch out to other business centres, both interstate and offshore. But yeah, culture is an ongoing, perpetual you know, thing that you know, we all have to be focused on. But certainly, you know, on the same page.
And you know, you talk about culture and how it's changed. What are some of the biggest challenges that you face in your business right now? What are sort of the things that, you know, I don't want to be passe by saying keep you awake at night, but what are some of the key challenges that you're facing?
I think it's internally, it's definitely people. It's you know, that's you know, it's 80% of your challenges are people related, but 80% of your opportunities people related. And that will never change because, again, that's your point of differentiation. Externally, though, it may be, you know, vendors. It might be you know, customers. You know, they're changing needs and changing requirements. I don't see our competitors being an issue. I don't see market conditions being an issue. I mean, we're young enough and nimble enough to actually either ride the wave or, you know, overcome those issues. But I, you know, I would say my biggest challenges that I face would be generally people related and ensuring you've got the right people within the business.
And if when you don't get it right, what are some of the impacts if you don't get the people part right?
It's really opportunity cost. It's it can be a massive distraction. You would like to put your energies and your focus on sort of positive activities, but when there's either underperformance or people aren't aligned necessarily to your goals and objectives or the vision of the business, it can be a massive distraction. So it becomes a bit of opportunity cost. And not just internally. I mean, we've had some joint ventures as well, which haven't panned out as we would have liked, but it saps up so much of the energy of the business. It's really, it's not to say it's insurmountable or you can't overcome it. It just creates a drag, on the business, but also, on the culture, just overall.
And the next question is around commercial wage. So, how long did it take you until you're actually pulling a commercial wage or a wage you're comfortable with out of the business?
Oh, that can take years, and depends on, how ambitious or aspirational your program is. One thing that I've been doing personally is just pumping a lot of money back into the business. So, just last year we went through a restructure, as an example, where we used to have everything going through one entity. Late last year, we went through a restructure where we carved out all the different entities. So we've created a holding company, we've created a services company, we've created a licensing company, and we've got about, a dozen business units. So that all costs money. We're also reinvesting into technology, which again costs a lot of money in terms of the setup, but also the licensing requirements around that. And within financial services, it's highly regulated. So you need to operate within what they call an AFSL, which is an Australian Financial Services License, which is regulated by ASIC. We have a very strong license, but it costs a lot of money just to get that license, and then it costs more money to maintain it. Earlier this year, we got a variation to that license, which, again, costs more money. In addition to that, we've also launched a number of funds. So one fund is what we call a credit fund, which lends money both on a first and second mortgage basis, and that costs money in itself to actually get developed. And we've also got a property development fund, which again costs money to get developed. But it's also the upkeep of those funds. So in the early stages of the business, you're plowing in a lot of money, it can take you years before you're actually earning the levels of income that you would ideally like to. But it's all a relative thing. Is it just purely the income? Is it the capital growth? Is it through other means that you get either satisfaction for doing what you do? Sometimes it's not just money driven, so to speak. But I think the money comes if you're adding the right value to your customers.
And the last question in the build section is around Narelle, your partner. So if Narelle was listening to this podcast, and hopefully she will listen to this podcast in the future, what would you like to say to Narelle for all the support she's given you through this journey?
Oh, she's been incredible. I think the only question when I said that I want to start the business was, how much do you need? As I said, I sold my house and started the business. She was very aware of, my plans. I've always wanted to start a business. So you do definitely need that support. But, she's very aware of the long hours that I put in. I work most Sundays. I've got three young children. I think they're aware of the sacrifice that we'll make. I would say thank you for the support. You do need a good sort of family team around you. Because you can be a little bit selfish in undertaking your own goals and your own objectives, and that can be cost of others. So there's a lot of sacrifice that's involved in that.
The next section is the live section. So what are some of the daily habits that you do each day to help you be successful as you are?
Look, I'm not a routine sort of guy, to be honest with you. My alarm goes off at 5:45 every morning. I won't say I actually get out of bed at that time, but, you know, first thing you do is just roll over and get your phone and start checking your emails and any messages that you may have missed. And then, you know, start reading the news. But look, you know, I go to bed pretty early as well. I'm in bed 9:30, 10 o'clock most nights. I will read before I go to bed. You want to make sure you're trying to get in as much exercise as you can and eating healthy and keeping hydrated and all that sort of stuff. But I wouldn't say I'm an overly sort of routine sort of individual. So I couldn't answer that one. Not in a positive way, but just more in a traditional way.
And I actually am reading a book at the moment called 5 Seconds, and I think it's Mel Robinson is the author, and it's about counting from 5 to 1. So when you know that alarm goes off, basically count 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 and get out, and you don't think about it, you just do that. And I must admit, I've been doing that the last few cold winter mornings, or, you know, meant to be spring soon, but yeah, and that certainly made a difference. So instead of thinking, I just count down and off I go. The next one is around a cause. So what's a cause or something that you're really passionate about that you'd like to share with the BLG audience?
Yeah, look, as a business, we do support various sort of charities and causes. I mean, last year I did the Oxfam, 100K sort of walk and run, and raised, I think it was $4,000, which is a fantastic effort from the team. And, you know, a number of my team members are part of various charities and not-for-profits, et cetera. I think the nature of our business just allows us to support the business community and the entrepreneurs in Australia. So that really is in a lot of ways my cause. So the Silk Group, in a lot of ways, is my platform to engage, you know, to give those people greater choice and accessibility to markets and products they can't get any otherwise. I think, sadly, in Australia, we're very limited for choice when it comes to financial services. So in a lot of ways, the Silk Group services those mid-markets, and that is certainly my core or our cause. But beyond that, yeah, we certainly are part of various not-for-profits, charities, and various associations and councils.
Right, and the last section is the action section. So just some quick-fire answers to some questions to help people go and implement their plans. So the first one is your number one personal productivity tip.
Now, yeah, that's an interesting one. Look, on a day-to-day basis, again, I don't necessarily have one. If you're looking to get into business, I would suggest that you start writing down your ideas. It's one thing to have them in your head, but start actually writing them down. And once you start doing that, you take a bit more ownership around it. And you start to jealously guard it, and you start to add to it, and you start to really, it really starts to come to life. So depending at what stage you're at, I would suggest, writing down your goals and your objectives, a business plan that sort of supports that. I certainly write down my own KPIs every year at the start of the year, and I like to, keep to it as much as I possibly can. Obviously, other things get in the way at certain points, but I wouldn't say I necessarily do that on a daily basis, but certainly on either monthly or quarterly basis, I'm doing that. I actually also do some video diaries of myself, throughout the year, just to talk about my progress as well. One thing I'd suggest also is just reading. Either self-help books or autobiographies or biographies of people that are actually being quite successful. There's a number of people that have come from nothing and they've achieved so much in their lifetime. And I think the only thing that holds people back is themselves. But I would say, obviously investing yourself through, putting in those ideas and building out a business plan and living them out.
And if you had to mention one book that you'd recommend someone to read and why?
Do you mind if I mention three books?
Yeah, go for it.
I just say that because these three books, in my mind, serve different sort of purposes, and they may be relevant at certain points in one's either career or life. I think the first one is a book called The Pursuit of Perfect. It's written by a guy by the name of Tal Ben-Shahara. And the irony of The Pursuit of Perfect is the fact that there is no such thing, and that life goes through a series of ups and downs, but it's your ability to ride those waves. It's a very, very good book. Another book is by a guy by the name of Brian Tracy. It's called Maximum Achievement. And I think it's a very good holistic book. And Brian Tracy's actually had some courses developed around that particular book. The other one is called The 10 Times Rule by Grant Cardone. But he talks about an outperformance mindset. And I guess, pushing the boundaries and putting in the hours or the efforts and activities to actually achieve your goals. But those three books are probably, within the context of what we're talking about today, just those three books would be the most relevant ones.
Excellent. And, you've demonstrated today just the breadth of experience you've had, a lot of banking experience. Like you said, you worked three out of the top four banks, boutique, been involved with a lot of high net worth individuals, very successful families. Out of all of that you've learned, if you package that up, what's some parting advice you'd like to give the BLG audience?
Yeah, I think, the first is, as I mentioned before, it's just overcoming your fears. Don't doubt yourself. Believe in yourself. The way you view the world is unique and, follow through on that. The other thing too is, as I mentioned before, is just having grit to push through some of that uncertainty, having the perseverance, the patience, the persistence, the courage. You've got a lot of naysayers, and the way you've got to look at it is, those naysayers will tell you those things is because they themselves can't do it. It doesn't mean that you can't do it. I've talked about overcoming loneliness, but there's a lot of things that you can do to either overcome that fear or to write a business plan or to buddy up with people or to learn. I would say just follow your dreams, your aspirations. You only live once. Think about, what you want to do, what you believe in, what your legacy may be. Think about what's your alternative, And what I mean by that is do you want to go back to a corporate environment? Personally, I don't. I would suggest that people just follow their dreams and aspirations. That's certainly what I've done.
And how can people find out more about you, Kobe?
Yeah, I mean, as all businesses do, we have a website. It's www.silkgroup.com.au. We're happy for people to email me to kobe.jones@silkgroup.com.au.
Brent, well, it was fantastic catching up and just seeing how much you've progressed since we spoke. And, I think it was a couple of years ago, but I just love how you've taken that brave step and that vision that you want to be the number one, private, private wealth or private bank?
Yeah, private investment bank.
Yeah, private investment bank globally, I think is a brilliant aspiration. I love when Australians have aspirations like that. So we wish you all the best in the pursuit of that and really appreciate you coming on the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks again, Paul, for the opportunity and well done on your initiative as well, mate. I think people out there would appreciate what you're putting together as well. So well done.
Brilliant. Great. Thanks, Kobe. Have a great day.
Cheers, man.
Thank you for listening to the Build, Live, Give show. If you found this show helpful, please share it with others so we can build businesses, live great lives, and give back to the community. If you would like to join the BLG community, go to our website, www.buildlivegive.com. Until next time, thanks for listening.